Welcome to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Here are your hosts, Daniel Meyer and Chris Tatro.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the HHO Podcast. Today we have a special guest with us, Bleeds Red, White, and Blue. We have Aaron Slater with Relentless Defender. Quick little bio about Aaron and his background here. Slater, as he is affectionately known to by his peers, is a veteran of law enforcement, experienced patrol, field training, SWAT, criminal investigations, undercover narcotic investigations, mid-level supervision, command-level supervision. He holds a Bachelor of Science in Organizational Leadership, a Master of Science in Criminal Justice Leadership and Management, is a Master Peace Officer, and is a graduate of Law Enforcement Management Institute of Texas Leadership Command College. He is most notable for progressive leadership, innovation, and implementation of fitness programs for law enforcement, recruit programs, departmental rebranding, community policing programs, problem-solving police training, strategic planning, social media programs for law enforcement agencies as well. He's a co-creator of the Rosenberg Police Facebook page, which has been featured throughout the world, such as People Magazine, Good Morning America, Fox News, Police One Magazine, The Queen Latifah Show, Australian United Kingdom News. And currently, Slater is the instructor of the Public Agency Control Council, teaching in the increasingly popular community-oriented policing and social media. Aaron is the founder of Relentless Defender Apparel down in Texas, out of Richmond, Texas. He dedicates his work to serving and providing the best to the Thin Blue Line clothing to those who are dedicated to much of society. Feel free. Well, I almost read the whole bio, which means please contact him. But yeah, we're happy to have Aaron. We do a lot of work with Aaron and his crew with his apparel. So thanks for being with us today, Aaron.
Yeah, you're welcome. I appreciate you guys having me on. And what you almost did is you almost said, end of quote, repeat the line is what you
said. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, Ron Burgundy, he will read everything on the teleprompter.
there's someone else that we know that does that as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, and sorry.
Is there anything that you haven't done?
Yeah, plenty. I assure you, plenty. But let's get into it, guys.
Yeah. So let's talk about your police career. You know, it sounds like you have a pretty long 20 years. You said too, I think, right?
I did a total of 22 years.
22. Yeah. Let's talk about where you started and how you progressed.
Well, of course, I went to the academy in '97 and started in 1998, from there, of course, like anybody else does, you start out on patrol and did patrol for several years, became an FTO, field training officer. And from there, I was promoted to CID. In the agency I worked for, there's only about 75 police officers at that agency. So it's not a big agency. It's not a small agency, but it's more of a medium-sized agency per se. So moving into CID, at first I worked general case assignment, and then I was assigned ultimately to the burglary and theft division, and I worked that for about 3.5 years before I moved over to narcotics, and where I worked for a undercover narcotics squad, and it was a HIDTA squad. And I don't know, I'll just explain what HIDTA is. HIDTA is a high intensity drug trafficking area, so it was a task force of many local agency officers, federal officers, FBI, DEA. And we essentially worked on mid-level and DTO organizations. From there, I became a narcotics sergeant. And so I did narcotics for about 6 years. And then I was promoted to lieutenant. I came back to my agency, promoted to lieutenant, commander over patrol. And now, during that time, I also was interim over CID for about 9 months, and about 14 months I was interim as well over dispatch, which was not the highlight of my career by any means. That was a kind of a nightmare. Imagine having 14 dispatchers and 55 patrolmen. 55 Man. Patrolmen were a lot easier to deal with than 14 dispatchers. And I'll just be upfront with that.
I believe it.
But yeah, I had a great career. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed essentially every minute of it for the most part. I ended up leaving full time in 2014, and we'll talk about that, but That led me to starting this company. And then I was reserve from 2014 to 2020, almost 21.
That is a long career. That's a lot.
So you just got out of law enforcement pretty recently then.
Well, I got out of law enforcement full time in July of 14. And reserve is, of course, reserve. I would never consider that really being a cop, every day living the lifestyle of a cop. For the last 7.5 years, I've lived the lifestyle of an entrepreneur more so than a cop. I can be honest with that.
All right. Yeah, Chris has got the law enforcement background, and I got the military background, so
What'd you serve in?
I'm still active duty in the Army.
Oh, wow. Wow, awesome.
Yep, I'm doing the recruiting thing. I started out as an infantryman and been doing recruiting now for about 7 years. So
okay.
Kind of a different world, and then I just ended up in Portland, Oregon, so it's completely different than what I'm used to.
Gross. You're the guy that says, hey, come, you can be anything you want to be, and then got them.
Yeah, I wish it was that easy these days.
Yeah, right?
It's a whole different world now.
Oh, yeah.
A whole different world now. Chris, how long were you in?
Oh, man, I did it 9 years, Minnesota National Guard.
Okay.
I deployed a couple times, and yeah, I was in tanks, but I never actually went in tanks when I was deployed. I was always on my feet or in a Humvee, so infantry for the most part. So, yeah. Yeah, beat up your body, you know, and move forward. And then go into law enforcement, beat up your body more, you know, even better. So,
yeah.
And then what was your highlight? Sorry, Dan.
Highlight? I can tell you that for the 6 years I was in narcotics, I thoroughly enjoyed that. I really, really did like working undercover. I liked working undercover cases. I liked working narcotic cases. The cool thing about that for me was the idea of, you know, being able to essentially know that there's a target out there, being able to plant the seed, grow the seed, crop the seed, or actually nourish the seed until you're just ready to crop it. And then next thing you know, this person's whole life is in your hands and they don't even know it until it's too late for them to even know that they're going to prison. So this is one of those type of things where it's kind of interesting and it's kind of, for me, was kind of fun in a way to know that you're changing the world and affecting the world on a bigger scale, because we all know that narcotics, it really does create a whole lot of other crimes. It creates a whole lot of tragedies and those types of things throughout your community and your world that you live in. So I thought, you know, when you take the root out of the problem, a lot of times you're affecting a whole lot more than just that one problem. There's a ripple effect throughout your community when you take dope dealers out throughout your community.
Well, and being that you are in Texas, you know, what kind of challenges did that give you with being closer to the southern border?
Well, so I policed in a city, the city of Rosenberg, which is essentially a destination distribution city just outside of Houston. Houston is one of the largest, if not the largest, destination and distribution city in the United States of America, with the border being 5 hours away. Houston's a hub for anything that's going up north to Dallas area and all the way up and everything to the west. The type of seizures that we would get, and especially up on the freeway when we would have the interdiction officer do it, I mean, it'd pull in, you know, on a regular basis. We'd pull in millions of dollars. We'd pull in, you know, take for example, we had a load that was 20 something thousand pounds of weed. We would pull in, 40, 50 kilos of cocaine, meth, you name it. I mean, there was even an instance where we stopped an ambulance running code, and sure enough, it was a fake ambulance, and the entire thing was lined.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That is wild.
Must have took some serious planning to coordinate that, get an
ambulance. Yeah, how would you identify that? I mean, well, obviously an ambulance. I mean, they all
I had an interdiction cop that worked for me that was just brilliant. And I asked the same question because I heard it come over the radio, and he says, hey, show me stop in an ambulance. Well, first thing you do is, oh, by the way, can I cuss on this?
Oh, absolutely. Let it rip.
Okay, good. Yep. The first thing I did was, it was one of those, oh shit moments. Like, oh shit, what are we getting into? Right. So I head up to the freeway and I walk up and I said, David, you stopped an ambulance. He goes, it's a private ambulance. I said, what do we got? And he goes, man, I've seen this ambulance run code back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, week after week. And so the last time I saw it, I said, you know what? I'm going to do some research. And I looked it up on the internet. I tried to call phone number. I couldn't find any company that even relates to this company that, that was on the side. And he goes, and so I just was going to stop it real quick. But when I got to the driver, of course, his body language told me something's wrong. And then the driver and the paramedic were brothers. And then I find out that the patient is also a brother. So there was three brothers driving this ambulance. And and ultimately, it just raised suspicion. And sure enough, and when he opened the door, the guy was trying to put a line in, and there was blood everywhere because they didn't know what they were doing. And so he just put two and two together, and here they are.
That's some dedication on the criminal's part, though. Like, had a fake patient, everything, trying to stick IVs in them.
Man, you'd be surprised of all the different things that we've seen as far as cover loads and how they're transporting. One of the other things that we have and plagued by is the human trafficking down here as well.
Yeah.
We would get truck after truck after truck, and imagine just an F-350 driving down on the freeway, and it would be, stacked in the bed with just, people. You'd have two, three people stacked on top of each other. And we started learning, hell, all you have to do is stand on the top of the bridges. When a car passes under at night, there they are. So then we would go stop them, and they'd get in a small little pursuit, and they'd wreck out, and people would be flying, running everywhere. And
oh man,
and we'd end up having to chase them. And ultimately, it is a serious problem, because not only were we seeing that, but we were seeing sexual assaults, because they would have teenage kids or teenage girls up in the front seats and those types of things. And we started learning, hey, the reason why they're having these teenage girls up in the front is because the coyote is essentially sexually assaulting them throughout the entire trip. And
oh, wow, that's so terrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah, it sounds like you've seen quite a bit of different things throughout your law enforcement career, and it takes a toll over time, I'm sure. That's pretty crazy. Like, the ingenuity and what people can figure out in order to get around and skirt the laws, it's pretty crazy and sad at the same time. You guys had that huge recent news with, is it San Antonio, where the semi truck full of people were?
Yeah. That's not the first time. That's happened many times. Yeah. And of course it made national news this time, but yeah, we've had them down in Victoria, which is about 2 hours south of us. It happens a lot more frequently than you'd believe. In fact, we would get calls pretty frequently throughout the year of a dead body on the side of the freeway. And what it was somebody was what died of exhaustion or asphyxiation or even heat, and they would just drop on the side of the road and keep taking the rest of the human trafficked people.
Roll them out the back and just keep moving.
That's it.
That's wild. It's like they're treating them like feral animals.
Well, they are. Right. They're bought. I mean, literally, what happens is they pay a fee, or they say they're going to pay a fee, but they don't have the money to pay the fee. Call it $10,000. So it's basically, get me there, and I promise I'll work it off. So, and I've worked human smuggling or stash houses of essentially illegal immigrants that have been smuggled up. And when you get in there, they'll be in a room in a house. A 10 by 10 room with 30 people in there and a 5 gallon bucket in the middle of it where they're urinating, defecating, and that would be, everybody has to use it. And you're talking about everything from 7-year-old kids all the way up to 70-year-old women that are in these rooms. And then you start finding out, hey, so what's the deal with it? Why? And how do they make their payments? Well, people will come up, they'll drive up, they pull in the garage, and take, for example, a restaurant owner, right? And he'll sit there and say, well, I want those three people. I'll pay you $30,000. They're debt. Now I own them. And then they'll go work for him for however long he believes.
Oh, no kidding.
Absolutely.
Wow. It's like a barter for it labor, is. Essentially.
No, you're buying people.
Wow.
You're buying people.
Yeah, that's crazy. And there's probably, I mean, majority of the public don't even know those things are going on.
No, they don't.
They obviously know about the the human trafficking and people, you know, coming across whatever border illegally, but no one knows what that actually looks like.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
I don't see any of that in my line of work. That's for sure. I know it's out there, but man, that's crazy. But well, yeah. So you do your police career, your narcotics is a highlight. Like, is there anything, and you don't have to get too deep and dark, but anything throughout your career that really sticks out as a dark point?
I mean, I've unfortunately seen everything from a father kill his entire family, or kill his wife and his mother-in-law in front of his, you know, kids. And I can tell you that wasn't something that will ever leave my heart and my mind. One of the things that was interesting about it was he was a prison guard here in Texas prison system. And he was a prison sergeant, in fact. And one of the things that was, he was on the run. And after he ended up killing him and murdering his wife and mother-in-law, in fact, he murdered him to the point where he almost cut her head off in front of the kids. And the kids were sitting there trying to hold her head back on. The kids were traumatized by this, and he'd fled. And we were trying to find him for several months, and it wasn't until he was aired on American Most Wanted that we got a tip that he had just left this old people's house in Georgia, that he was staying with them, and they had dropped him off at the mall. They went and picked him up, and sure enough, he was there just sitting on the mall bench. Interestingly, while he was on the run, the kids, they were terrified. They were afraid he was going to come back, living with their uncle. But and we were trying to provide as much security for their house as possible. But we knew that he was gone. And but we couldn't provide enough mental security for the kids per se.
Right.
So my wife and I, she's also a police officer. We said, you know what, why don't y'all stay with us for a little while? So we took the kids in and we let them stay at our house for a little while, because we figured, you know what, if they're going to feel safe anywhere, it's going to be in a house full of police officers. Because at that time, my sister-in-law, who was also a police officer for the sheriff's office here, lived with us. And so we just kind of round the clock were there with the kids.
I think that's a pretty true testament, you know. Law enforcement these days, especially these days, you know, over the last couple of years, have gotten a ton of negativity about, you know, the bad apples in the bunch, or even the ones that try to do good still are seen as being bad. But, you know, you take that one example of dealing with these traumatic experiences that you guys deal with, and then still having the kindness in your heart to take in someone that you didn't know at all, but you want to see those kids, you know, feel as safe as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And and to be honest with you, you know, I've worked with a lot of cops in my career, and really I've worked even more cops outside of my career, because I train all over the country. And one of the things that I know and without a shadow of a doubt is there are more selfless, good, loving, just great cops out there doing great things every single day. In fact, the cops that are out there doing selfless stuff are the ones that you're actually not seeing. Okay. They're the ones that the numbers aren't being displayed. And unfortunately, even in their own agency, they're doing great things every single day that aren't being counted. But I can tell you that it's those things that are making the world a better place within their world, which is their community.
Yeah. And when that uniform comes off, doesn't mean it necessarily comes off. I mean, they're still mind, body, soul is all there, you know, to be able to help the community. So just peeling off that uniform at the end of the day doesn't mean that they're not still trying to invest in their community and give back outside of that uniform piece. And that's pretty common.
Yeah. And you know, I talk about it all the time, and I have a theory that law enforcement needs to split their worlds into three worlds. And we actually have a fourth world, but that's something that I talk about later on. But the three worlds that we live in is interesting, because we need to learn how to split those worlds out a little bit. And I've made those mistakes throughout my life and my career. And you take world number one. World number one is, like, for the understanding, you know, you may have had the worst day in your life and the most stressful day in your life. And if anybody that has kids, they can relate to this statement. when you have that worst day in your life and you walk home and you open that door and that kid comes running up to you and says, "Daddy, you're home," or "Mommy, you're home." And you reach down and you pick that child up and you put them on your chest or you put them on your shoulder. It just immediately you have this understanding of, no, this is the world. This is what matters. And then all everything that just happened outside in that big world actually becomes so small. And you start understanding that, you know what, this is what we live for. Because no matter, you know, how many bosses you have, no matter, you know, how many issues you've had in life, whatever the case may be, even when you retire, the one thing that's going to remain consistent is going to be your family. It's going to be the kids, those types of things. And I think a lot of times, unfortunately, police officers, we get so embedded in the idea of this, you know, we have to sacrifice so much, including family time and including that type of thing, that we forget that sometimes. And that's unfortunate. Then we have world number two, which is everything underneath the rooftops of the police department. And I'm going to tell you that when it comes down to the politics within inside a police department, sometimes I think that is sometimes more of a stressor than even world number three, which is your community when you're out actually patrolling and seeing and doing and that type of thing. And in this time and day, that's getting even more hard every single day, because one of the biggest plagues in law enforcement today is leadership. It's bad leadership. And I say this all the time is I question the idea of people saying, well, you know what, the media is what's problem with, you know, with law enforcement, because we get attacked by the media. And my argument to that would be, we've been attacked by the media for decades. The difference is, right, we have strong leadership that would say, no, you're wrong.
Right.
Now we're saying, now you have leadership that is saying, I'm sorry, even when we're not wrong. And I think that that causes stresses on police officers in this field that is undue. And what happens? We start having these stresses start building up and building up and building up, because we're seeing these things in the streets. We're dealing with these things at home. And then we have very little to any support inside our world too, which is our own department, where we're supposed to be brothers and sisters taking care of each other and noticing these things and trying to, you know, help each other with this stuff. And you're not seeing that. And honestly, organizations like yours is reaching out and saying, no, there is people out there that care. There is people that out there that, you know, that want to see, you know, healthy mind, body, and soul.
You know, and that, now that I wanted, you said the first three worlds, and I wanted the fourth.
You read it in my bio. One of the things, and really one of the reasons, and the way I was able to start this company was, I was very innovative with social media. Okay, one of the things about social media is, even though we may not like it, we may not understand it to the understanding of, or not value and the idea that it is a world in itself, but it is. In fact, we wouldn't even have this podcast right now. We wouldn't even be talking if there wasn't social media being able to communicate. Right. Now, social media has a hell of a negative aspect to it as well, but in all reality, it's made the world smaller. It's made us be able to communicate a lot more. It's been able to, for police agencies to be able to outreach and communicate with their public a lot better. And it's almost like being able to have a town hall meeting every single day if you want it, and keeping the public informed. And it's also been able to do things like let you see the behind the scenes, let you become part of the understanding of what law enforcement is. Soror Peel says it the best when he sits there and says things like, you know, the police are the public and the public are the police. The only difference is one's getting paid to do the job. But in all reality, the public has the same, and it's incumbent upon them to do what? Keep themselves safe as well. Work with the police to make these things happen. So with social media, we have the ability now to do what? Communicate with them better on a constant basis. So it's a good thing, and if used for good purposes. Okay.
Yeah. And that's like what the folks over there, like Humanizing the Badge, and then, you know, all the other law enforcement that are on social media are doing a fantastic job of, you know, being pretty transparent, I think, on social media. You know, you've got the different niches of people that are comedics on there, and, you know, people that post some more serious stuff. I think one of the things I saw recently, I can't remember if it was like Officer Daniels or who it was, but they posted like warrant roundup Monday, and it was like, tag everyone that's got a warrant and we'll go find them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And this is dropping news, and I don't even know when this is going to air, and it may not even It may be airing even prior to this actually being official, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you. Humanizing the Badge is merging with Berlin's Defender Foundation.
Oh, no kidding.
So Humanizing the Badge is going to be a project under the Relentless Defender Foundation, and we're adopting it, and it will now be run by my nonprofit organization.
I love that. That's cool.
And it is. And I used to be a board member of Humanizing the Badge. And what I like about it is one of the things that I'm serious about is community policing. And that may sound silly because people sit there and say, oh, community policing, community policing, community policing. Guys, community policing is not programs. It's not the idea of dancing cops and stuff like that. Yes, it does help, okay, in the idea of humanizing and softening what police officers are about, but that's not community policing. And in fact, I hear chiefs all the time, and I teach it all over the nation. I also teach leadership all over the nation, and both of them kind of run hand in hand. But community policing is a whole lot more involved than just the idea of dancing cops. What community policing really is getting involved with your community, actually going out there, you know, finding kids that are kind of just abandoned out there to the world, and you take the step to sit there and say, no, I want to kick a can with a kid. And then you go from kicking a can with a kid to kicking a ball with a kid. And then what happens? Ultimately, now you've given them a choice in this world. And you let them see with the other side of law enforcement, you know, drinking coffee on the porch with one of your residents. You know, there's a whole lot that goes on that people don't see. And in fact, when I said earlier when we started this podcast, I said it's usually the things that aren't counted that are the most important. And when I make that statement, it's because there's agencies out there and say, I want to see how many tickets you have. I want to see how many arrests you have, because it can be counted and it's easy. Okay. The last thing that we need to do is negate the idea of the things that are happening behind the scenes, like the most important things, and that's like making relationships. I think as a business, I mean, as a police agency, we need to run it more like a business. We need to run it as a business aspect in this idea. We need to figure out what our profits are. And if you really look at any business model, the only way that you can be successful as a business is what? Your profits, right?
And right, yeah.
Minimize profit loss. So if you're looking at that aspect, I can tell you this. Police agencies need to do a whole lot better figuring out what their profits are. And what are their profits? Community relations. Every single person that you have the ability to make a relationship with, that's your profits. And when you get that profit margin up, you know that you're doing a great job across your community, which is your world, which is that third world of making relationships. And that's not something that is done by a billboard, and it's not something done by a social media post. That's officers in the community doing these things one person by one person by one person, event by event by event, and it just builds.
Right.
And we'll see if I get in any trouble for saying this. I don't really care. But earlier you brought up, you know, a lot of times it's the leadership problem, and I'll compare it to the world of recruiting, because it's nowhere near what law enforcement is, but we're dealing with the community. It's so easy to take the tangible numbers of, you know, how many tickets have you written, so on and so forth, rather than looking at what effects are you having for our community 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, the relationships that you build and the impact that you have on the youth. And I saw a video the other day. It was, I'm not sure what department it was. Chris might know, or you might know. It was the video of a cop going, I think he was going to arrest some kid's father or something like that, that had a warrant, and the little kid couldn't have been older than like 6. He was sitting there cussing at the cop and talking shit about his shoes. And
I know what you're talking about.
And anything that he could point out about him. But, you know, you think that kid has never experienced, you know, what law enforcement is actually there to do, and, you know, the good that they can do. They've only experienced their small little world, more than likely their parents telling them their whole life, hey, you know, cops are bad, they're terrible people, don't trust them, and all these countless things.
Yeah, and I saw the video as well, and it sickened me, because well, all this tells you is he's being brainwashed day after day after day that cops are bad, cops are bad, cops are bad, and to the point to where the kid was trying to get violent with the cops. And one of the things that I talk about is that's an opportunity for us to step in and say, no, let me take some time and talk with this kid and at least give him an option. Problem is it's a hard battle to fight whenever they're being immersed in this culture of hate cops, and they're going to grow up with that understanding.
Yeah, no, your analogy and how you explained it's spot on. You know, just being able to understand and wrap your head around, you know, the comparisons that you made really, I think, breaks it down in layman's terms really well for people too, you know. And a lot of my department, our mission, you know, is, you know, enforcement through education, you know, and I'd much rather have a very positive contact with somebody to educate them based on all the various laws that we enforce to help them understand that and move forward. I mean, there are people out there who have egregious issues, you know, that we have to address, but more often than not, that initial contact of saying, you know what, you messed up here, let me help you fix it. And then also, here's my phone number if you have additional questions. Give me a shout if you got more, because our laws are always changing when it comes to, you know, game and fish stuff. But, you know, being able to have that engagement with those individuals, and I know our worlds are a lot different when it came to your law enforcement versus mine, but that is, you know, our version of it is that education piece to be able to relay that information to people and how to find it and then how to reach out to us is huge. And I know it goes really far with the community too. But I mean, not only as fish and game, you know, game wardens go, you know, I mean, but we do find ourselves, you know, doing regular police work every now and then, you know, actually my whole department was very involved in the Minnesota Twin Cities riots that were a couple of years ago, you know, and that was also eye-opening, I think, not only for officers, but also the community to show, you know, our involvement when it comes to regular policing and being involved in these situations, you know, unfortunate circumstances, but at the same time, be able to make that connection and create a different bond and people understand who we are and what we do.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate that. Go ahead, Dan.
We talked about some of the bad stuff, you know, that you saw as law enforcement. Have you got any, you know, good or funny moments that stuck with you after 22 years?
Most of them you can't talk about, but I had a great career. I enjoyed every moment of it. It's just the one thing that I can say is there was a point, and I think every police officer kind of goes through this point, and they sit there and say, you know what, is there life after law enforcement? Because it becomes your identity. It becomes everything that you are. And a lot of people sit there and feel, you know what, is there anything else I can do? And one of the things that I always tell them is, guys, the amount of training and the amount of experiences and the amount of education that you receive by being a cop, it's more so the question is, what else can you not do? I mean, from everywhere from being able to sit down, you know, with a criminal in a interview room and being able to get him to confess to a crime that they don't want to confess to because they know they're going to prison. Well, you are extremely great salesman, okay? Because you have the ability to do what? Influence people and get them to do things. And that's a business trait, okay?
Right. Communicate.
Communication. Yeah, it's a great communication tool.
Resiliency, adaptation, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thinking in the idea of real estate, you want to go be a real estate agent, right? A lot of real estate agents, you know, they're timid. Well, imagine being able to walk up and just talk to anybody, because that's what we do as police officers. You can walk up to any scene and talk to anybody at any given time. And I mean, you name a job, I can tell you just about any job that there's a reference to what we can do based on the skills and training and experiences that we've had as police officers. So, one of the things I love to explain is, you know, there is life after law enforcement. You know, majority of people do, if they're going to do an entire career, they're going to do at least 20 years in order to hit the retirement. So I think a lot of people are like, man, I'm getting scared. What else am I supposed to do? And there is, just know that there is a lot to do.
Oh man, I know how to mow the shut of yard. I mean, I can adapt my skills really well and have peace and quiet and mow along. So there is,
that. Absolutely. Well, a good cop is not afraid to work either. So it's you know, there's tons that you can do. I know, you know, great cops that end up becoming construction workers or construction owners. you know, in all aspects of construction.
Nonprofits.
Run nonprofits, do all kinds of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of just awesome stories after law enforcement.
I think you're a pretty solid example of that happening.
Oh, well, thank you.
The business that you started, or the, you know, it's more of a brand than anything, I'd say. Mm-hmm. So what is it that made you want to get into, you know, being an entrepreneur? Like you said earlier, you know, starting back in around 2014.
Well, it was kind of by mistake at first. Okay. So, so I'll explain to you why I even left law enforcement to begin with full time. So I was a lieutenant, and my chief retired, the chief that I worked for my entire career. He ended up retiring, and the assistant chief, which left a chief void and a chief opening. The assistant chief and I both went up for police chief, and he ended up winning the position. Well, in law enforcement, what does that ultimately mean for the person that was going against him within the same department? Exactly.
Contentious, maybe.
Yeah, there's a little bit of contentiousness. So ultimately, to make a long story short, I was let go of my agency. So at that time, it was devastating for me, because all I knew was law enforcement. And all I thought was, you know, this is what I know. This is what I love. This is what I breathe. You talk to anybody that I ever worked with, and they sit there and say, how are you not a cop? So for me, it was just one of those devastating moments. And it was one of those things where it was one of those questions, God, why did this happen to me? You know what I'm saying? And I did everything right that I was supposed to in law enforcement. So how is it that I get cut? And then I'm not going to talk mess about that new chief, but he shouldn't have been a chief. Okay. he was one of those guys that just nobody knew. And he just kind of sat around forever until kind of the position opened up. And just because he had 35 years, they said, well, I think he deserves it more than you, who has only 17 years.
Oh, that's tough.
And it is. But I
can really good at being a yes man.
Oh, that's exactly right. And leadership has nothing to do with bar, stars, and stripes. And it has nothing to do with time on the job. And in fact, I know a lot of cops that have a whole lot more leadership skills and a whole lot more events on the job than a lot of chiefs do. And a lot of times, you know, in every police department, there's bigger and better leaders in their police department than the ones that are actually wearing the stars and the bars and the stripes. The leadership, it just is a whole different aspect. And that's what my degrees are in, organizational leadership and leadership and management, my master's degree. So I take a lot of pride and passion in the idea of talking about leadership. But I'll move on to how this started. So I got let go, and I initially had started a training company, and I was going around teaching other agencies how to create and initiate a social media program for their agency. And I'd learned a whole lot about social media, because running the Rosemary Police Department page back then, it was kind of taboo. We were doing things like humanizing the badge. You know, one of the things I teach is, you know, never take a picture or never post a picture of the officers that are, I call them the funeral pics, those ones that are in full uniform, just standing there all, you know, bold face and that type of thing. No, take them into candidness. Never post a picture unless they're smiling. Never post a picture unless they're, you know, just enjoying life and that type of thing. So let people see what we're really about. Well, that grew and it grew and it grew, and we became the fourth most followed police agency in the United States within a matter of a year. And so there was a lot of things that were, you know, we were doing a lot of, getting a lot of attention from, you know, national media, and I was doing interviews and those types of things. And I said, you know what? After I was let go, I said, yeah, I want to teach other agencies how to do this, right? So I started teaching other agencies how to do it, and I was scheduling classes, and it was doing well. And I had started 27 different police pages with all different niches of policing. So you'd have a narcotic page, a canine page, and you just had all these different pages that I admined. And really I did that so that I wanted to be a broker of instructors and just being able to have people come in and, you know, instructors and be able to have outreach to do that. Well, that wasn't paying the bills per se. My wife was still a police officer at the time. So it was essentially a one household income. I was struggling. And ultimately, one day, She had come to me in January. And in fact, it was January 10th of 2015. And she comes in with the property tax form and says, hey, we need to pay our property tax. Well, to put it things in perspective, we had no money, zero money. I mean, we were living off credit cards. We were borrowing money. We're trying to make this thing work. And it was just, I knew I wanted something bigger. I know I didn't want to go back to law enforcement and just have it ripped out. And it just felt like there was something bigger that I'm supposed to be doing. And so there was an argument. And if any of y'all have ever had an argument about money with your spouse, there's no winning. Okay.
No.
There's no winning when it comes down to financial arguments. Okay. And there's, and you can't just make money just appear. Okay. So, and I had a bunch of job offers as well. And I was turning a lot of those job offers down, mainly because, you know, when you get a bad taste in your mouth over something, you just don't want to go back to it and get those types of things ripped out and that type of thing.
Right.
So January 10th, we had that argument. And that night I literally just stopped everything. And I just prayed. And I said, you know, God, I don't know what you want me to do. Okay. If you want me to go back to law enforcement, I'll do that. If you want me to continue down this training route, I'll do that. But I give up. I just show me what you want me to do and I'll do it. You show me the path. I promise you I'll put the work in and I'll make whatever it is that you want me to do. The very next day I woke up and, you know, still arguing, still trying to figure life out, trying to figure out what to do. I go put my headphones on. I go in my office. And through this time, I learned how to do graphic art, mainly because I couldn't afford to hire a marketing person or a content person. So I started learning how to do graphic art. And so I started designing design. And the design ended up being what it initially was our logo at first. And that was a Spartan helmet with the blue line through it. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
And so I designed it. And I'm like, you know, that's pretty cool. And that was back then when, like, 300 was a big deal, the movie 300. So there was a lot of Spartan stuff going on. And so I said, you know, that's a pretty cool deal. And you know, in the idea of Spartans, you know, they don't back down and that type of thing. So we just, I kind of like that idea of it because that's kind of the mentality of a police officer. So I had this design and I thought to myself, what am I going to do with this? And I'd seen all these people, they putting, you know, shirt designs up and they were selling them on like all these different websites and those types of things. Kind of like Amazon for t-shirts, like Teespring and that type of thing. Right. So I said, okay, well, let me try this. So I put it up on a shirt and, my wife and I were going to go to a friend of ours birthday party. And so I put up on a shirt and I made the campaign and I put it up on all 27 different pages. And, we left to go to the birthday party. About 2.5 hours later, we come back home. And of course we're not talking on the way up to the birthday party. We're not talking on the way back, but at the birthday party, what do? You act like everything's great, right? So
fake it till you make it.
Well, that's exactly. It's kind of like social media. Everybody looking at you saying, hey, your life is great. And you're like, you just see the pictures.
Yeah, right.
Act like you didn't just rip each other's head off before leaving.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly right. And then everybody thinks everything's great. But I get home and I go check the computer. Of course, she doesn't know anything about this. And I go check the computer. And I said, I wonder if I sold any shirts. So sure enough, I go check the computer. And during the time that we were gone, I had already sold over 200 shirts. And I'm like, oh, wow. Whoa, wait a minute. So I'm over here and I'm typing in. I'm like, okay, is this, there's something wrong? Did I put, you know, the wrong price in or whatever?
Right. Sure enough,
everything was right. Now all the comments were like, awesome shirt. I just bought one, just bought two, and this. So I let that campaign ride for about, well, you had to let it ride for 7 days. And I let it ride for 7 days, and I owed $6,056 on my property tax, by the way. So $6,056, and 7 days later, I walk into my master bathroom where my wife is in there curling her hair. I said, babe, I just need to tell you something. She goes, what? I said, I've got the money for the taxes. And she goes, and knowing that I used to work undercover narcotics, she turned and looked at me and says, what the fuck are you doing? Right? And I said, and I could see it on her face. And I was like,
slinging door.
Slow down. Yeah, exactly. I said, slow down.
Took some of the skills you learned by arresting the people.
Right, exactly. And I said, no, just relax. I said, let me show you. So I take her in there and I show her the screen. I'm showing her, you know, these are t-shirt sales. I put a t-shirt up and I put it on all these websites. And ultimately, I'm selling shirts. And of course, she's looking at it. She's so confused because she couldn't understand, you know, how you made this money in a matter of 7 days, because cops just don't do that, right? well, and then she was like, what kind of pyramid scheme is this? And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Is everything have to be criminal, right?
Right, yeah. And successful and, right now.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'm not even sure I want to take you along on this ride now.
Right.
So to explain, I owed $6,056 in my property tax. I made $6,058 in 7 days, $2 wow. more than I needed for my property tax. And for that's me, awesome. It's one of those things that it was a clear sign to me, a career path. It was a clear understanding of what it was I was supposed to do. I knew nothing about the t-shirt business. I knew nothing about apparel. I knew nothing about branding. I knew nothing about anything that I'm doing right now. And, but I did know this. I knew that God was going to provide based on the question I asked. And when he did, I also knew that he was going to give me a little bit more than I need because, well, he's going to give me a little more need, but do something great with the rest of it. And that's a lot of that is the reason why we're so involved in philanthropy. We're so involved in getting involved and staying involved with nonprofits because to me, that's really what the mission is. Our mission is about what can we do with the fuel of the raise or the selling of t-shirts. What can we do with that money to help continue to change the world and continue to help the world like we did when we were in law enforcement. And, and our motto here is wear with purpose. So that means when you wear a shirt, you're wearing that shirt with purpose. It has an understanding. It has a meaning. But on top of it, it has also understanding wear with purpose of it's gear with a purpose. Okay. And for everybody that wears Relentless Defender, what I want to get across is you're not buying a shirt. You're buying a movement. You're buying a mission. Right. You're buying an understanding of things. And to me, that is what it makes Relentless Defender a little bit different than a lot of these other apparel companies. A lot of the other apparel companies are money first, mission later. And we're money last, mission first. And that's what changes. And that's what has really propelled our company more so than anything. And that's more so what I take pride in from this company is just that understanding of mission first.
Yeah. And you guys do phenomenal in your customer services. You can't beat it, you know, and, you know, as an organization too, we had used other apparel companies a couple different times, you know, and I can't compare it. I mean, your guys is just above and beyond. And I think it was right before Officer Mattson had his injury, actually his shooting that he got shot in the head. Dan came to me and I think maybe we saw some shirts that Officer Daniels was promoting for you guys. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
I think Dan's like, hey, we should look at these guys. And then Officer Mattson's shooting occurred. And I know we came to you guys to help support a fundraiser for Officer Mattson for his King Eider hunt. And you guys slayed it. And the amount of shirts that we moved was unbelievable. And you guys gave us huge discounts, probably damn near cost for you guys. And that was huge for us because that was able to fuel and fund the entire trip for the most part. I'll tell you what, though, you know, packaging 1,000 shirts in my living room was a pain in the ass,
not fun.
But it was well worth it. All of it was worth it. But, you know, as soon as you got us hooked connected with Steph, big shout out to Steph. Steph is phenomenal graphic artist down there. Easy person to talk to and super very talented in what she does with graphic design. And she designed exactly what we were envisioning. And those shirts for Officer Mattson sold like crazy. And I mean, you guys are stuck with us now.
Well, and I will tell you that, and I appreciate hearing that because we take a lot of pride also in our team. I've got some of the best people I could ever ask for that work here with me. And you're right. Steph is phenomenal at what she does. But yeah, the when it comes down to officer involved fundraisers, one of the things that I was very steadfast about making sure of is we will never make a dime off of a fallen officer ever. And so a lot of people ask us, why don't you make a shirt for every single fallen officer? Well, I'm going to address that. And I think it's important to know this. I've seen a lot of companies that they'll go out and they'll make a shirt for almost every fallen officer. And to be honest with you, if I did that just out of doing it, and 100% of the profits were going to the families, there's no way we could survive as a business. It's impossible. Okay.
Well, and that just speaks to how much there it's going on too.
No, and that's exactly right. And the thing that I'm not going to call out any company names, but when you start thinking about it, if they're doing that on their own, what's the purpose? Why are you putting shirts out and saying that these are officer fundraisers if you're doing it without one request from the family or request from the department? Okay. And we don't ever even try to do a fallen officer shirt unless the department asks us, unless the family asks us. And when they do, we don't ever deny them. But we don't just go out and do it just to do it for that sake, because for another reason, I do believe that that's very disrespectful. Okay. To put somebody's name on there, to put, you know, a design together and sell it without their input or the permission of at least the department, if not both the department and the family. And we have to have a clear understanding where that money's going. We have to have a clear understanding of what nonprofit is going to do this. And there's a lot of work behind each one of those fundraisers. And typically, and we do a lot of them every single year. To date, we've done over $2 million to date in donations. But I can tell you that 100% of every one of those shirts, we have never kept a penny from a fallen officer fundraiser. And
wow.
With that being said, I think that's another reason why it separates us, because we are truly run, owned, and operated by cops. My sister-in-law is the COO. My wife is the PR director. We're all cops. Jason, my marketing manager, he's a cop. And so we all understand it. This is something bigger than an apparel company. We don't come to work with apparel backgrounds. We come to work with a law enforcement background, and that'll always be first.
And you, I unfortunately had a partner that passed during the line of duty, and you know, we worked with you guys for sure for her too, Sarah Grell, out of here in Minnesota. Unfortunate accident that occurred, you know, and her life was taken, and you guys did a fundraiser for her, you know, and the process that you just spoke about, we went through, you know, it wasn't through HHO, but it was through our union, the Minnesota Conservation Officers Association. And you guys raised a significant amount of money with those shirt sales. And we know the family really appreciated it, you know, and it's just, it's amazing to, you know, to be able to see the donations that you guys give and raise to the community for these fallen officers. We're glad to have you guys there to be able to help with that. It's one more thing to help people, you know, during these difficult times that no one expects. I mean, there's always the idea that it may happen, but no one really expects that. But for the money to get donated.
And the transparency with it too. It's been a while since I've been on the site and looked at the fundraisers that you guys have going on. But, you know, one, you make it super easy to find. You're not trying to, you know, hide them within the rest of the apparel that you sell,
right?
Two, if I remember right, you guys put on there exactly how much money's been raised for each fundraiser.
We do, and we leave it up as well. So if you're a fundraiser site or fundraiser section of the page, and we don't have historically all the way back 7 years, but you'll see where it kind of started. And we started leaving it up there, and doing fundraisers. The other thing is we do a fundraiser shirt and coin every single year. And the proceeds from that go to the National Law Enforcement Memorial Fund every year, and also Concerns of Police Survivors. We split that down the middle between those two organizations. And those are our two primary organizations that we donate with and partner with now, and that we're corporate sponsors with.
Now that you bring that up, the National Law Enforcement Memorial Association, you are on the board now?
I am. I'm a board director.
Yeah, so you were just out at Police Week not too long ago, and were you a keynote speaker?
Couple things. One, we go to Police Week every single year, and we've been going to Police Week every single year since I started this company. And I was about 2 years ago, I was honored with being appointed to the board for the National Law Enforcement Memorial Fund, which is the National Law Enforcement Memorial Wall and the National Law Enforcement Memorial Museum. So it's board of directors for both of those in DC. And every year that I've been on the board, so it's been the last 2 years, I've had the honor and the privilege of being able to get up in the candlelight vigil and I read the fallen officer names for Texas. And that's a very, very honorable thing for me. I love it. It's one of those things that I feel as a representative of Texas that, you know, I couldn't ask for a bigger honor than that. The as far as keynote, I wasn't a keynote speaker. I will tell you that what I do encourage you to do is if you go to the museum, I was the committee chair for the new film in the museum, and I encourage everybody to go watch that film. We did an outstanding job, and I say we. All I did was say, "Hey, let's do this." But we had outstanding directors and an outstanding filmmakers and outstanding stories that were brought together and told about law enforcement. And I hope somehow everybody should be able to see this. Every law enforcement officer, every family, every survivor should be able to watch this video and just be filled with pride about what policing really is.
Is that a video that is shareable?
It's not. So what happens is we really, really want to promote the museum and promote going and visiting the museum and those types of things.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So for this first year, at least, the only place you can see it is inside the museum and the museum theater. We have talked about, because we do want to start taking it and possibly competing in some of these film festivals with it. Because when you compete in these film festivals, it brings a lot more eyes and ears on it. And what's interesting about these film festivals is a lot of these film festivals are not cop friendly.
Weird.
Yeah, exactly. But what we want to do is again, just put it in their face and say, why not? Why not?
No, here's I like it. That's good.
Here's what it is and why not? Right.
And if I actually went down to the law enforcement memorial and museum, was it? It was when I first moved to Pennsylvania. I drove down there to pick up my dog from the airport. And the wall is amazing. And then the museum, the history that shows.
Did you say your dog or your daughter?
My dog.
Okay. That's okay. We'll brush by that.
Yeah. But you know, it's kind of on the outskirts of the downtown DC area. So it wasn't, at least when I went, it wasn't super busy. And you kind of get away and, you know, enjoy the peace of seeing the memorial. And then I'm really big into the history stuff, you know, and being able to see, you know, kind of the progression of law enforcement from, I can't remember exactly what year it starts there, but seeing the progression and the equipment used, the stories that are told and everything like that is amazing.
Yeah. And we're continuing to progress the museum, to keep it updated. So if you've already visited the museum, it's a different museum than it was when even you went. Okay.
Cause oh, wow. That's good though.
Change and those types of things. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I remember, yeah, I started following you guys, the National Law Enforcement Memorial Association, pretty close when I became a Federal Reserve police officer back in 2008, you know, and been pretty involved since with following your organization. I just bought a bunch of commemorative badges and coins and whatnot for that, and I love putting them up on the wall. You know, and I know one thing I want to share with everyone, and I'm sure Aaron is sick of me texting him, but I asked, you know, this next year, I'd love to try and get us down to Police Week and get into Tent City, you know, and be able to see you guys and sling some of your products with what we do too. And I'll have to pick your brain on how to get down there.
No, we prepare for Tent City 9 months in advance. So
I believe you.
Honestly, it's about time that we start talking about it because it is a big ordeal. Remember, there's about 40,000 plus cops that emerge on DC during Police Week. And Tent City is just a complete mayhem, but controlled mayhem.
Right.
But ultimately it is a
safest place on the planet at that moment.
It actually is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But, and I'll just say this to anybody. If anybody's never experienced going to DC for Police Week, you really need to. It's something that's an amazing time. Amazing event to watch and to participate in. It's an emotional roller coaster by far, but you've never seen brotherhood and family until you walked through a week of DC in during Police Week.
When you look at other professions, I mean, what else is really out there that really has that type of gathering for that long? Really, I mean, you don't see that frequently, you know, so to have the Thin Blue Line and all the support there, It's a pretty unique thing, and people travel from all over the world for that.
Oh, they do. They come from England. They come from Australia. They come from all over the world. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Different walks of life.
That's right.
Different, yeah, different policing, different everything, but, you know, it's still the same job.
Yeah. Well, imagine putting 40,000 people with beer trucks everywhere and that many people having a good time, you know, drinking, and not one fight you ever find. Everybody's just, you know, enjoying each other, loving each other, understand what we're there for. We're there for the fallen. We're there for the fallen officers, the families, right, those things, and for our brothers and sisters. And it's just one of those things that people know why we're there, and they honor that.
Right.
I know when Chris first brought up, you know, trying to get a tent there next year. I think it was during when Police Week was happening. Or
maybe I watched Aaron like post videos, and I'm like, dude, you gotta get there.
I think my immediate response to it was like, yeah, absolutely, let's do it.
Yeah. Well, let me know, and of course I will help you guys in every way I possibly can. But I assure you, you'll do it well. You'll do very, very well there, and the exposure that you get is like none other that you'll ever have.
Oh, very cool. So I know we're coming up on an hour here, and we probably could talk for 3 or 4 hours, and I already delayed Aaron by 2 hours here. So,
no, you didn't delay me.
You got family at home. Got to get you back home, man, as I'm sitting in my office. So we would thank you very much for all the support that you've given us and the things that we've done. I think we're going on probably a dozen different designs that we've done through Relentless Defender on different shirts. And I know you got a pretty exciting expansion coming up here with the machine that you have getting put in. Want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, sure. We're always expanding in business. Yeah. You know, you kind of you almost have to, if you're going to continue to grow, if you're going to continue to, and a lot of it is not on purpose. It just happens. The mission grows. But we purchased a new machine, and the cool thing about that is we're going to be able to do something like, take for example, we don't sell this shirt. You can only get this through the National Law Enforcement Moral Fund because we do their merchandising. But take, for example, this kind of shirt. If this shirt was for sale on our website, now we're going to be able to take this design, and you're going to be able to choose what shirt you want it on, what color shirt, what if you want it on a tank, if you want it on a hoodie, you want it on different colors, you want it on whatever. You make that decision, and we don't make it until you buy it. Because of what the machine does is a DTG machine, direct to garment, meaning it prints. It's a computer that's printing it instead of screen printing it. And it can make up to 240 shirts per hour, but each one of them is a different shirt. If you were to ever see the process, and again, I encourage anybody that ever's down in the Richmond area, sit there and say, hey, I'd like a tour of your shop. We'll give you a tour. We'll show you how shirts are made. We'll show you all these all the machines and those types of things. But ultimately, what this does is it opens up for a lot more product choices and those types of things for the customer to sit there and say, hey, you know, put it on this or put it on that. And it's in your hands now. And it opens up for a whole lot more designs.
I know for us being, you know, not really in the merchandise business, you know, with the nonprofit side of things, there's so many requests for custom designs or different shirt styles and things like that. And for us having the, you know, being partnered with you guys and having the access to something like that is going to be huge, because then we can actually provide a little bit more than, you know, hey, we're only going to order this t-shirt once this year.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
I actually probably ask Steph once a month where things are at. I'm like, man, I'm excited. Cause, you know, we have had chats about potentially, doing a store eventually with you guys, where people can go directly to you guys just for the merchandise side of things. And you guys just don't do, you know, just the shirts, the hoodies and stuff like that. You guys also do coffee cups, right? And like challenge coins, blankets.
We do challenge coins, blankets. We do decals. We do, and you know, anything that's engraved. You pretty much name it. We do just about every single thing in-house right here in our shop.
One cool thing too is he is very open. Like you said, if he says come to the shop. I went down there, man, it was last September, almost a year ago, when we finally met face to face, and he gave me a tour. We sat up in his office, you know, we shot the shit for a little while. I think I met every employee you had in the building at that point, you know. And also one cool thing about Aaron too is he's really walking down exactly saying what he does. And he has a nonprofit that's attached to his facility too, called Saving a Hero's Place. And, you know, they create chairs for fallen officers that get requested throughout, man, the world at this point. Is it the world?
No, it's nation. It's
nationwide. Okay.
Right.
You know, and he makes handmade chairs that saves a hero's place for fallen officers, and it's pretty incredible work. And he's helping out a lot of people, a lot of different nonprofits and organizations, donating back to the community, donating to families of fallen officers. So very good apparel company, not just for the products, but just because they're ingrained in what you do and support you. And we really appreciate everything you do for us. And, you know, like, I'll never forget the first time when I asked Steph, I said, "Hey, can I get that logo you designed and how much?" And she's like, "What do you mean how much?" I'm like, "No, really, like, for real, how much? So that logo you just made for us, how much do I got to pay for it?" It was in my email 5 minutes later. I had to pay
them off. I think the first company that we went with that designed one of our original logos,
a few $100,
like $500 to buy our own logo. Like, man,
you know, and that just shows that they go above and beyond. So, you know, not only has he and the company and people in his company all have been dedicated servants, you know, and have gone to the communities and helped stand people up, but you know, they're continuing to do that through the company that they have here. And we appreciate you guys a lot.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys. And again, I reiterate, if you need anything, you know who to call. Like, literally, we're here to help you guys.
Oh, I will. You know, I got your number.
Yeah. Well, call me anytime. Call me anytime. Thank you guys.
Well, one thing outside of, you know, the enormous generosity that you guys have to, you know, create Chris read in your bios, you know, that you're a true patriot. And, you know, before we went live with the podcast tonight, you were like, you know, I'm the owner. I'm the one that answers for good and bad things. And one of the first things that stuck out to me was, you know, I guess your guys' level of give a shit, like with some of the designs that you guys make.
Right.
They're fucking hilarious. And, you know, if anything, just buy them for that. And they're super comfortable. I don't think I've ever had a better t-shirt than what you guys have.
Well, if you give me a second, I'll expand on what that was. When I first started out as a company, it was strictly just law enforcement designs, okay? And then we all know all the different turmoil that we've had over the last 7 years that I've been in business. And it got to the point where I sat there and said, you know what? Somebody, instead of just, you know, being quiet and not saying anything, somebody's got to start speaking up, okay? And somebody's got to start speaking out. And it got to the point where I'm a retired police officer. I don't answer to a police chief. I don't answer to the public. I don't answer to anybody. I answer to my own faults. So ultimately, one of the things that you will always find with me and Relentless Defender is we will speak what we believe. And one of the things that's going on right now is there's tax on law enforcement. There's tax on law enforcement integrity and those types of things. And a lot of them are political attacks. Well, I assure you that I have no problem of attacking back and speaking up and those types of things. Because I know there's people that will watch this that wear a badge and they wear that uniform every single day. And I know what your limitations are. And you've got to remain quiet. And you can't, you know, say the things that you want to say. I will say it for you, I assure you.
I love that. No, I love it. It's good stuff. And appreciate everything you guys do for us and the communities and the professions. Like, it's pretty awesome. And once we get off this podcast, I got some more info to share with you. But yeah, we'll cross that bridge a little bit.
You know, we can't do nearly as much with what we do without support from, you know, companies like yours. You know, the tons of different businesses from
well thank from all you guys aspects. Yeah, and thank you guys for everything that you guys are doing. I mean, you guys aren't making money off this. You guys are doing this out of your heart, and that's you will find that the organizations I like working with are the ones that you can honestly tell that they're true to what their mission is. And I've been burned by a lot of organizations, and I've given money to a lot of organizations that end up becoming my fault because they weren't vetted or they weren't, you know, properly Well, I guess go back to vetted. They just weren't vetted. And I thought when I first started this business, well, they're a nonprofit. They must be good.
Right.
Well, I was naive in believing that. But I can tell you, if Relentless Defender is involved in a nonprofit, and we're somehow, I assure you that you're a good nonprofit. I assure you that you guys are doing what you need to do. So if you guys want to donate to this organization. They're doing great things.
Thanks, brother.
Appreciate that.
Hey, and come this December, I'll be back in Texas. I'll be with Sean Olsberg, who is on our board now. He's also our state director. And you guys need to come up, bring a kid or two, and go deer hunting with us.
Really?
Yeah, you should come. Okay. We got a spot for you guys.
Okay, awesome.
I'll send you the dates.
Send me the dates, absolutely.
Yeah, it's fun. We go. I went down last year with one of my kids, and I'm coming back with a different kid this year. And we run a lot of rifles with suppressors on them, and we will shoot, go hunt hogs, deer, turkey, but deer's number one. And we do a processing class to help teach the kids on what it looks to harvest an animal and also process an animal. And this will be in up in De Leon, Texas, which Sean calls it West Texas, but it's right in the middle of the damn state. So if he wants to call it West, I'll let him have it.
Well, the state's so big, you don't really know where West starts. And
no, it's like, I'm like, you're in Central. We'll call it Central. He's like, no, West.
But he calls it West because there's nothing past San Antonio. So if you're there, everything else is West.
Right. Beautiful country, a lot of fun, but we hunt a lot of pecan orchards and stuff, which is pretty cool too, because the kids can pick pecans that are coming off the trees, and a little different, but yeah, when I come back down, let's meet up and let's get you guys out deer hunting. I think it'd be a good time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think that about wraps up for the night, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah. And you know, once again, appreciate you taking the time to come on here, tell your story of, you know, your experience through law enforcement and, you know, transitioning into the business owner and, you know, everything that you do outside of the business to give back, or within the business to give back to the law enforcement community. So, you know, we appreciate you, and I know everyone that you've helped definitely appreciates everything that you guys do.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And if you guys ever go to the website, you can use the discount code HHO2017 and you can get a discount from Relentless Defender, and that not only supports their business, but actually pushes money back towards the organization too. So pretty cool deal that Aaron set up for us. We really appreciate that. And I need to start sharing more of those photos on social media because I forget sometimes. I'm sorry.
And then before we wrap it up, you know, we always like to remind everyone, you know, if you're going through a mental health crisis of any kind, the National Suicide Hotline recently changed their number to kind of more mimic 911, where it's a lot easier to remember. So now all you have to do is dial 988, or you can text 988 to get some help that you might need, or reach out to HHO, and we have assist certified individuals that can be there to kind of come in clutch whenever you just need someone to talk to, not sure what steps to take, you know, find yourself at the bottom of the hole.
Very good. Well, thanks, Aaron. Appreciate you being here. We'll talk again soon, and we'll touch base on that tent city situation and the deer hunt.
Okay, absolutely.
All right. Thanks for coming on. We'll see
you. Thank you guys for having me.
No problem.
Thank you for listening to the Hometown Hero Outdoors podcast. For more information about Hometown Hero Outdoors, visit our webpage at www.hometownherooutdoors.org.